Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman. And co-hosting with me today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Maintaining our social distancing of 6 feet, Ed and I are. Ed and me? I don't know.
Ed and I are maintaining.
I don't know. In the midst of a pandemic.
Does it matter?
Does it really matter? Ray Pritchard's in KC. How you doing, Ray?
I'm 600 miles away.
Ray's in Kansas City, Kansas, and in the Venus studio.
That's exactly right. I'm in orbit.
You're in Pluto.
That's right.
Fred over here is on Venus.
That's right. Here, Fred, all by myself.
Fred Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have everybody separated. Pretty much. Brent, our producer and runs our control board for the radio program, is in studio as well, again, 6 feet away. And, folks, we appreciate you listening to AFR, and thanks for praying for us. I know everybody's got their own personal concerns, family members and such, people losing their jobs. But we are blessed by God to be able to continue to broadcast across the country on our 181 radio stations and on the app. Speaking of the app, Ed, what do folks need to do to get that?
Well, if they want to listen to us anywhere they have a signal, they just go to the app store.
You mean a cell phone signal?
Cell phone signal.
Not a radio signal.
And you can download the app on your iPhone or Android device. I don't think you go to the app store for Android. But anyway, you go to wherever you get your apps and download that. It does not take much time at all to download it. And then anywhere you have internet signal, you can stream the melodious sound of American Family Radio. And like our voices, you could hear your voices. If there was a signal, if there was a cell phone tower in the middle of the Gobi Desert, you could listen to Today's Issues. How's that for mind-blowing?
Where's the Gobi Desert?
I think that's out. Isn't that out in Asia?
I think it's out in Asia.
I think it's in Asia.
Northern China.
I think it's in
Mongolia, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm just saying, if there was a cell tower in the Gobi Desert.
If you're lost in the desert,
you could listen.
You can still get AFR.
You could listen to Tim, Ed, and Ray on Today's Issues.
Gotcha. And Fred.
And there may be people out there in the Gobi Desert actually listening.
Okay.
And they're trying to high-five us from there. So.
All right. And Facebook and YouTube, just type in Today's Issues. You can watch us there, engage with other folks who listen. And also, we post our stories that we discuss here on our Facebook page, Facebook and YouTube. Type in Today's Issues. Ray, we hadn't talked to you in a while. What are things looking like in Kansas City right now?
On the weather side, sunny and beautiful. On the virus side, half the city, most of the city is just completely shut down. Schools have been out. Churches are, they're not meeting, all doing the online thing.
And right.
Yesterday, my wife and I, we could, you can get out to go to the grocery store and stuff. So I went up to Costco, and, there's a lot of stuff in Costco, but there weren't very many people. I'm used to going to Costco or, say, Walmart, and it'd be jam-packed. By no means jam-packed. And everybody was maintaining huge social distance. So I think the reality, things are fine here in Kansas City, but the reality of, another 30 days at least, I think that has set in on all of us.
Hmm. Well, I wish I could buy some stock in the Clorox company right now. Allison, my wife and I, Fred and Ed and Ray, we went on line last night because she said, hey, we're about out of the disinfecting wipes, the kind you can use on your hands and such. She bought 3 or 4 packs, a few weeks ago. And so she said, we were on the patio last night. She said, go online, and I don't want to go to the store, so go online so you can buy some, you know, a box of them or whatever. I went online, and they were all out of stock.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they're restocked today, but they were, like, out of stock. Or they said in-store purchases only. So then Allison said, hey, we can make our own.
Now, yeah, that's true.
Those aren't words I wanted to hear. You know what I'm saying? It was about 11 o'clock. I'm tired. I knew. And then she said, go online. And I just, you know, kind of slowly, I saw it. So I'm sitting here thinking, honey, it's 11 o'clock. I don't want to learn how to make hand wipes right now. You know?
So, right.
But evidently, I did. You got to have lemon juice, aloe vera, and rubbing
alcohol.
Yeah,
some serious alcohol.
Oh, you made your own?
90% or something.
Have you made your own, Ray?
No.
Okay.
No. But you dig it, what, 60 or 70% alcohol? I mean, it's pretty heavy.
It's got to be real heavy, yeah.
Fred, ever made your own disinfecting wipes?
No, but my wife has been making the hand wash.
Yeah.
There's a recipe for that, too.
Yeah, the hand sanitizer.
It's very
similar to what.
All right, what's that recipe, Fred?
That recipe, well, let me try to give you a few of the ingredients. Very potent alcohol, as you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
like rubbing alcohol.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's different types.
There's different levels of that. And then my wife went to the local grocery store, which has hair care section there. And there's a gel that some women use for their hair that I think she got the recipe on Pinterest. My wife did. And she's taken this gel, and this adds a thickness to all of this and a rubbing agent, and put all that together. So we now can make a supply of this hand sanitizer.
Yeah, and it's only costs you $60 a quart to make it.
But it's homemade. Yes. Homemade, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife is actually making face masks, too.
No,
really?
Are you serious?
Yeah, she is.
Now, how is she doing that?
Like sewing them or what?
Yeah, she's sewing them. And she found a formula for that, and she's been making a few of those.
Well, you have to. That's good for her.
You know, that entrepreneurial spirit.
Absolutely.
That's right. And she could probably start, speaking of entrepreneurial spirit, easy for you to say, she could probably start selling some of those online.
She already has, not online, but she sold several already.
All right. Well, Fred, what's leading the news this morning?
Well, as we continue to pray for our nation with regards to the coronavirus, let us not forget Spain and Italy. The numbers coming out of those two countries this morning are scary. Overnight, Spain alone recorded 149 new deaths. Between those two countries, Italy and Spain, they account for almost two-thirds of the 35,000 deaths around the world. If you believe China,
right.
Yes.
China's kind of got an asterisk there.
Yes.
Yes.
We don't really know. Mm-hmm. But for what we do know, Italy and Spain. Ray, would you have any idea why Spain would be having such large numbers of?
Boy, it's a. Did they just not get started? Did they not close their borders? What's going on over there?
Well, I remember last week we talked about this. Italy. One of the reasons they say the death rate is so high there in Italy, I think it's 11,600 as of this morning. They say the average age of the population is one huge factor in Italy. But also, one of the other reasons that I've read is their medical care system is just overwhelmed. Now, the populations of those two countries obviously are far lower than the United States, but their medical care system is just totally overwhelmed at this point.
Yeah.
And so you have a situation where people who have this virus cannot get treatment. I'm sure that's a factor in all of this.
You know, another thing, it's hard for Americans to comprehend if you haven't traveled. Ray's traveled more than any of us.
Mm.
around the world, I'm sure. But I have been to Europe a couple times. It's an old continent, right?
Right.
And it's very socialistic. And by old, I mean much of their infrastructure is just, maybe with the possible exception of Germany and the UK. I haven't been to the UK. Germany's modern. But you take Italy, and I haven't been to Spain, but their hospitals are not like our hospitals. They don't have, also they don't have, what do you call these care centers that we have on every corner now? You know what I'm, you know
just
what
like, yeah, these
the urgent care, care.
Urgent care kind of.
Urgent, urgent care places that mm-hmm. we have all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can go and not have to go to the emergency room or not have to go to the, you know, to a doctor at a hospital, which is a, which was a wonderful idea whenever that came along 15, 20 years ago, and they've now, they're all over the country. They don't have access to something like that in these nations. So also Spain and Italy, I don't know about Spain again, but Italy, aging population, the way they conduct themselves socially, they're very touchy-feely, you know.
Hugging, kiss.
Hugging, kissing. It's you go into, as I heard Frank Turek talk about, you, there's no real public restrooms much, and so you have to go in and buy. You go in to eat somewhere or purchase something, you go in a small restroom. It's just the lifestyle, a lot of smokers. So it's just... it's just different than what we live here, how we live here in America for the most part. So that would explain some of the numbers in terms of why Spain and Italy seem to be so much higher death rate than the rest of the world. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, from this side of the water, United States, New York City, New York City in particular, continues to be the epicenter here in New York State. Overall, 67,000 cases now determined there, and the number of dead continues to rise, and in particular New York City. Some good news on that front. We kind of mentioned this yesterday. The Navy ship Comfort arrived in New York Harbor yesterday, has already docked, and they were scheduled to start treating patients today. Now, this big ship, if you haven't seen the picture of this yet, I don't know how many football fields long it is, but it is huge. It's an old tanker that was transformed into a hospital ship. But they're going to be able to treat 1,000 people. Now, those being treated on that ship are not coronavirus patients, but they're going to alleviate the pressure on the hospitals in New York City by being able to take patients who are suffering from other diseases, other medical problems. So this is a gift. This is military, medical personnel, doctors, nurses, all of that. It's an incredible ship. It has 12, I think, fully operation rooms, fully staffed operation rooms. So just an incredible relief there. Also, across the street from Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, Samaritan's Purse. Franklin Graham heads that ministry. Samaritan's Purse has setting up a tent hospital system there. Several tents, 70, 80 patients are going to be able to be taken care of there. So some good news on that front from New York City. There's one other story this morning that seems kind of strange. There are two big Holland America ships that are off the coast of Florida this morning, but Florida is saying, we don't want you. We don't want you to land here. Now, between those two ships, I think there's something like maybe over 2,000 people. One of the ships is the Rotterdam. The other one is the Zaandam. Now, aboard the Zaandam, there's already 190 people sick.
With the coronavirus, or they don't know?
They don't know. But four people have died already.
Mm, wow.
So Holland America is pleading for Florida to allow them to land there. There are 300 Americans aboard these two ships. But Governor DeSantis is saying, oh, no, our medical system in Florida is already overwhelmed. We don't want you here. So we don't know what's going to happen with these two ships. They were cruising. There was a cruise that was scheduled to be off of South America. But then the order came where the whole coronavirus exploded. They went through the Panama Canal, I think it was on Sunday.
They left March the 2nd, right?
I think it was,
from,
yes.
From where? From somewhere in South America?
Somewhere in South America, correct. Correct. And, of course, it was pretty well still summer weather down in South America, so people wanted to see the Falkland Islands and all that sort of thing.
They had to go through the Panama Canal. There was some talk about not being able to get through.
Yes. They were the people in that area obviously didn't want them there. The passengers were told to pull the drapes on their rooms. You know, we just want to get through here. But right now, this morning, as of this morning, Florida is saying you cannot dock those ships here.
So there's roughly 2,000 people on each of those ships?
No, there's 1,400 on the Rotterdam.
Okay.
And that's, 450 guests and 600 crew members on the Zaandam.
All right, so we're talking 2,400 people, thereabouts?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Okay, that would almost instantaneously overwhelm local hospitals.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just guessing.
Yeah. And these passengers, they're in miserable conditions right now. The ship's captains have ordered all the passengers to stay in their rooms.
Oh.
Wow. I mean, it's a horrible situation. But we don't know what's going to happen with these folks yet.
Right.
Well, you would think that Florida eventually maybe open up. I'm thinking out loud here as I'm saying this because I've been through that port there in Fort Lauderdale and also the one, I think, in Tampa. And you would think they would open it up. But the problem is exactly what's already been said. You've got hospitals across Florida beginning to fill up. Everybody's expecting the peak. And suddenly you're going to add hundreds more patients. But we can't keep the people on those boats forever, right? We've got to get them to port somewhere.
Well, it's not going to be Fort Lauderdale if that mayor has anything to do with it, because I heard him. He was adamant. They will not dock here. So you would have to have the governor. Sounds like he's adamant, too. I had not heard that. Above that, you'd have to have the president of the United States intervene and say they can dock. I don't know if that creates a constitutional crisis or not.
Who knows anymore?
Between a state and a...
Yes.
I don't know what the president will do, or if anything. You do have a lot of Americans on board.
Mm-hmm.
But I perfectly understand the feelings of the...
You'd have to disperse them, wouldn't you? I mean, you couldn't just dump them all in Tampa.
Somebody said take them to Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, I don't even know if they've got the hospital facilities for...
Probably
2,400 people.
I don't know.
I got to say, I've never been on a cruise, but everyone I've talked to has said that most of these cabins are pretty small, aren't they? They're not made for entertaining guests or for hanging out for a week.
Mm-hmm.
You sleep there, you shower there, you get dressed, and you go on the boat, you know, on the rest of the boat. So have any of you guys ever been on a cruise and could speak to that?
I was on one 2 months ago, just before this whole thing broke out. And everything you just said, it is exactly right. They don't want you to spend time there. They want you up perusing the casino or going to the restaurants or going to, you know, walking the decks or whatever. They're designed for sleeping, changing clothes, and that's it. It's very, very small.
So these people are being told to stay in their cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about literally cabin fever.
Yes.
That's separate. The definition of it.
I don't know what will happen. I know there's a lot of people. I'm not saying this is the right way to feel, but I was reading about this story last night, and there were a lot of comments on there, and people are saying, tough luck. You got on a ship, a cruise ship, on March the 2nd, when everybody knew this was spreading around the world, and you took off anyway. I'm not saying.
So help March me with the chronology, the second, though. Was that?
March the 2nd was kind of a.
Right.
You know, you've heard about it, Ray.
Right.
But I don't know.
Nobody's getting on a cruise ship today, right?
No.
Is, you know.
But that was a questionable time where, I mean, we were scheduled to leave for Israel. Right. On March the 12th.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Right. So on March the 2nd, you guys were still going to have your tour. It was called off later.
Yes, we were still going. What happened with our tour to Israel was we were scheduled to meet the group in New York on March the 12th and fly to Tel Aviv. Well, what happened was on March the on that
10th, month, wasn't it?
On that Monday, I think. It was that Monday prior to the Thursday, whatever day that is, maybe the 9th, Israel closed their doors.
Yeah.
And Benjamin Netanyahu made an announcement. I never will forget the look on his face. So uncharacteristic of him. He's usually, looks confident and in control. And he was sitting beside the health minister of Israel, and he was making this announcement that they were closing their borders and not accepting any more tourists. And you had to be a citizen of Israel, basically, to come in. And he looked like he had seen a ghost. And so we had to get on the phone and send an email out and get in touch with, all 169 folks. Fortunately, we have emails now. Oh, I can't imagine if we wouldn't have had the email, to let them know that that Israel's canceled us. We can't go. Please don't go to New York and expect to see us. And we will reschedule the tour when Israel opens back up. So I'm just saying that happened to us. We were planning on going, now it was getting dicey. We were getting concerned, but at the same time, if we would have canceled the trip ourselves,
sure,
we'd owed everybody back their money.
And maybe that's what some of these people were thinking. And we already paid for the cruise.
And the money was already sent to Israel.
Yeah.
So we didn't have the money to give back. I'm just saying. But people would have been upset saying, hey, they're open. Why aren't you going? So when Israel closed, it was, that made the decision for us. But I just give you that one example of our little group. And then you have millions of tourists all over the world deciding in that time period, early in March, do I go or do I don't go somewhere? And it wasn't exactly an easy clear-cut call.
So, Fred, these people have been basically on board these cruise ships for almost a month?
Yeah, well, the Zandam, it left Buenos Aires on March the 7th.
Okay.
Which was just the day before the U.S. State Department issued its advisory to avoid cruise travel. So just the day before.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation. I know if I had a family member out there on that on that one of those cruise ships, hopefully, like Ray said, they'll figure something out. But I can certainly understand from the perspective of the governor of Florida and the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, we can't handle this many sick people coming in to our state. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We're going to take our break, and when we get back, Sandy Rios will be joining us in a few minutes. Sandy is host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio. If you want to send us an email, we welcome those at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Tim, Ed, Ray, and Fred. We shall return momentarily with more of Today's Issues. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. Americans will be celebrating Easter Sunday in their homes, not at church. President Trump announced Sunday he's extending the national social distancing guidelines through April 30th. The president says the COVID-19 peak death rate is likely to hit in about 2 weeks. The announcement is going to be a crushing blow to many small businesses across the nation, especially many restaurants and diners. And it also raises a very important question. What exactly does the government know they are not telling the rest of us? First, we were told the virus was not that big of a deal. Then came the 14-day quarantine. Then they told us we would be free by Easter Sunday. Now it's April 30th, and there are no guarantees we will be able to resume our lives on May 1st. The president urged every American to heed his call to stay quarantined for another 30 days. The best way to end this nightmare, he says. But something tells me the nightmare may just be getting started. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed, Fred, and Ray. And they're raised in Kansas City, Kansas. And Fred, Ed, and Tim are in Tupelo, Mississippi. And we thank you again for listening to AFR. Well, joining us now is Sandy Rios. Sandy is Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association. So she represents us in Washington, D.C. Sandy does. And she's also the host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you? How am I doing managing the government for you guys?
Well, nobody here wants the job, so we're counting on you, Sandy.
Okay. I'm not doing very well, I think, based on the scorecard.
Yeah, kind of like those old Three Stooges episodes when they'd say, "Don't be afraid, we're right behind you."
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hey, Sandy, I wanted to ask you, I was listening to your program this morning, and you were talking, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I think it deserves a discussion concerning, is it Congressman Massey?
Yes.
Is that his name?
Yes,
He's the gentleman from Kentucky that was wanting a, on this bill that was passed, this $2.3 trillion, he was wanting a quorum and
a recorded vote.
What did he want? Because you were commending him and saying he was right this morning, despite the fact that the whole world was against him. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, he basically was saying how in the world. The bottom line is he's saying, how can we pass a $2+ trillion bill in this body? When the Constitution says that we have to be present and voting, how can we pass something so huge when we're not even here and we're than to be passing it by what's called unanimous consent. How can we do that? And as a matter of fact, the arguments were that he was putting people in danger. Peter King from New York was very upset. You know, you're trying to put us in danger by coming back to D.C., traveling and being together in that room, and how dare you? And the president was very upset with him as well, because he was afraid that Massie was going to delay the vote. But Massie was just trying to say, wait a second, you cannot throw out the Constitution. This is a precedent we should not be setting. And I agree with him. And then he also made the point, if we can require truck drivers to drive trucks, if we can require workers all over the place, medical workers, hospital workers, to continue to work through this virus, then why can't Congress, you know, put on a mask, put on a gown, what do you have to do, come back and actually read this bill and vote on it? But none of them wanted to put their name on it, Tim. The Republicans or the Democrats, they did not want to own up to what they were doing.
Why wouldn't you want to put your name on it? I mean,
because who wants to say that they voted to spend $2 trillion? We don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. It could come back to bite them. And certainly our Republicans who are conservatives, it's troubling if this is on their record. Democrats,
I agree in principle with what Congressman Massey's saying. I also understand, you read about Rand Paul, if you're going to get 430, how many people together in one room?
436, 435.
435.
I don't know about that in this situation. This is just unprecedented times we live in.
It really is.
But I understand what he's saying is you know, this is $2.3 trillion. We need to vote on it.
Well, the other thing, Tim,
we need to vote on it in a way that the Constitution requires. Go ahead.
Nancy Pelosi's already talking about the next one. This is a precedent. This is the third one they've passed, and this is a precedent, and it is a dangerous precedent. So Nancy Pelosi comes up with this big bill with all of her wish list in it, and everybody's home, and they don't even read it, and they, you know, just, what, send a piece of paper?
Yeah.
They don't do an official vote? I think there's something inherently wrong about that. And I also think, it's not easy for me to say, I think I can... I don't want to put myself in this position. I'm just saying, where is their courage? If healthcare workers can be on the front lines of fighting this virus, they can't. They're fighting it too. Part of this is just as important.
You're right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Ray, do you have a question for the person leading the government for us?
Very well, I might add.
Yes.
Sandy, so... are you inclined to believe? I'm just asking about, I want to ask about these numbers everybody's throwing around, the bell curve and all of that. Are you inclined to believe the dire predictions of up to 100,000, 200,000 people dying as a result of this? That's a hard question, I know, because we don't know the answer. But when you hear that, there were, you know, at the briefing, Dr. Birx was talking about that yesterday. How does that strike you?
Well, I was just trying to read this, find this name. Here we go. I wanted to find the name because I can answer that better if I tell you that there is a British scientist. We were using his model when we were projecting that, you know, a million,
right.
I think it was a million Americans are going to die. And his name is Neil Ferguson. He's a scientist professor at, not sure the institution, can't find it. Oh, Imperial College in London. Okay, so he just came out, I think 2 days ago, and said, you know, I think that model was wrong. He had predicted that 500,000 people in the UK would die from coronavirus. And now he's saying, you know, it might be more like 20,000. So our healthcare experts were basing their prognostications on his model. That's why it's all over the map. People have to understand these models are based on people's prejudices. Their assumptions. No one knows. They talk like they know. I do find it ironic, and it'd be interesting for me to hear you guys comment on this. The president was talking about trying to open up things by Easter and how wonderful it would be if we could all worship on Easter Sunday morning, if the churches could be filled. Wouldn't that be lovely? That's what the president said. So suddenly then, what, 2 days later, the experts are telling us, you know, no, as a matter of fact, it's going to be around Easter Sunday that it's going to hit the hardest. So, you know, how the inference is like, to me, it's very suspect based on all I'm reading. Like, why is it around Easter the worst is going to happen and the president had it so wrong? It's going to be the very worst possible. We can't possibly. I just think it's some kind of a... The New York Times, you know, came out with an article. You guys may have seen this about... basically, it says that evangelical Christians are responsible for the coronavirus.
Right.
Yeah, so...
And they're, what they're saying is, I didn't read it yet, but what I understand them to say... Fred, did you read it?
Yes.
What did it say, Fred?
Well, basically, that those crazy evangelical deplorables, they don't believe in science.
President Trump listens to them.
And President Trump listens to them. Therefore, they are the cause of this.
Yeah, you know, about that, I'm glad we can look at other parts of the world and see where Christians aren't controlling the government, where they're handling this so well.
Right.
Yeah, really, that's good, Tim.
Yeah, we can look at Europe. We can look all over Europe now, see, because Christianity is dead there.
Right.
And see how the secular atheist leaders are listening to the scientists. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, the point that I was trying to make in that by mentioning that was I wanted to graphically explain the hatred for Christians and why my theory about them choosing Easter to be the apex as opposed to the time when President Trump thought maybe we could come back to worship together might not be an accident. It's not just from them, you know, it's all the hatred to Christians right now in the press. In fact, did you guys know that when Mike Lindell started talking about yesterday at the press conference, after he talked about what his company, MyPillow, was doing for the company, making masks, he then said, could I please read this statement? And he talked about the need to return to God, to get in God's word, to get to start loving and caring for our families. And would you believe that networks pulled away?
Mm-hmm.
They did not cover that part. And the ridicule that was piled on him by reporters and writers was just incredible. So I'm just saying the hatred for Christians is palpable. Why would we not think that maybe that might translate to a Easter where they say the virus is going to hit? No, Mr. President, you can't open now because, as a matter of fact, the virus is going to be at its worst in Easter. Now, I could be way off base. Mm-hmm. I could be absolutely wrong. Only time will tell, but it just, I think it's possible.
I didn't hear all the comments. Ray, did you hear Mike Lindell?
We sure had those comments.
We do? Let's hear them now.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the MyPillow guy.
Cut number two.
Go ahead.
God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families. Our president gave us so much hope where just a few short months ago, we had the best economy, the lowest unemployment, and wages going up. It was amazing. With our great president, vice president, and this administration, and all the great people in this country praying daily, we will get through this and get back to a place that's stronger and safer than ever.
What's wrong with that?
Well if you hate Trump.
And if you hate God.
Yes.
Right.
Right, your thoughts on this?
You know, he made his statement. And then doing the mask, which is fantastic. God bless him for converting over to do that. Then he talked about the election. Then he said we need to read the Bible and pray. As a matter of fact, Tim, that's what we've been saying here at AFR for a long time. Nothing wrong with what he said.
Yeah, I think Sandy's right. By the way, she's right that there is a. Of course, we've known this, but it shows its ugliest side in times like this. But we know that the secular progressives in this country, there was a story the other day about how they're having a convention at Harvard to talk about the threat of homeschooling in the country and how to end that because these crazy Christians are, you know, not teaching their kids well. So there is the secular progressives, many of them, they despise, they're God haters. First and foremost, they're God haters, and they view Christians as ignorant simpletons who need to be put in their place. We need to be put in their place.
Or worse, put in a
camp as a
Brady's. Yeah, let me.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that there are two specific times in history where we saw how that went. We had Nero blaming the Christians for burning Rome when it was him. He was the one who burned Rome and then blamed them, and that opened him up to, you know, that was a good excuse to persecute and kill them. Mm-hmm. Then we had Adolf Hitler blaming the Jews for burning down the Reichstag, which was the huge building, the government building, beautiful building in Berlin. And it wasn't him. It wasn't the Jews. It was, you know, his own people. But he wanted animosity to be turned toward them and give him an excuse to go after them. And this is the dangerous part.
Yeah.
This is not just, you know, making us look bad. This is insidious.
Well, the comments of Mayor Bill de Blasio yesterday, was it when he said he obviously he's frustrated with houses of worship that were still staying open. We can talk about that as a separate issue. But he said that if they don't follow the rules, we might close them down permanently. You guys read that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Yes,
the mayor of New York. So we might close down houses of worship, even just talking about Christians. Yeah. He was also talking about
synagogues. I would just say, you know, I would encourage churches and synagogues to make the decision voluntarily to not meet right now, at least for the next 2 or 3 weeks. But I would say this to the mayor. Why don't you shut down the subways, buddy? Huh? Why don't you take care of that one first?
I don't think he mentioned mosques either.
I understand the difficulties that would put New Yorkers under if the subways weren't running. But, hey, that's what we're all having to go through is difficulties right now. And if you want to stop the spread of the virus, you stop people from packing on a Petri dish.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah. Hey, Tim, can I ask you guys that question? Another one. This is a story you probably saw. I don't have it in my – so I can't mention the name, but it's a mega church pastor in Florida who was arrested because he had services on Sunday, and the place was packed and people were worshiping, and so now he's been arrested, and he's been released. But what do you guys think about that?
Okay, here we go. We're about to divide our audience right here because we may even be divided among ourselves. Right.
The preacher's name, by the way, is Rodney Howard Brown.
And our good friend Matt Staber is defending him.
Yes.
Okay, folks, since Sandy is making us pick sides.
Well, she does run the government.
Okay, she does run the government.
It's very divisive.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, just to be clear.
May I just admonish all of us here, because there's going to be differences of opinion among Christians on this. And I would just say, please don't email us you can email us your opinions or post them on Facebook, but let's not call each other names because we disagree maybe on this kind of thing.
Regardless of how much Sandy tries to get you to turn on one another.
Okay, yeah. All right.
That's me, you know.
We've been talking about this morning in our meeting and amongst our staff. We're talking about there's a church in Tampa that had reportedly 1,000-plus people over in Sunday morning. Now, the church, what's the church's name, Ed?
The River at Tampa Bay. That's the name of the church.
Nothing's First Baptist anymore. Everybody's got a stream or a river or living waters or, huh? Frontier Church. I don't know.
Journey.
Anyway, okay, The Journey. Everything sounds like a song or a novel or something. Anyway, we do have First Baptist in most places. They haven't changed their name, but if they were Second Baptist, they did.
Right.
So nobody wants to be Second Baptist. So they don't get the best softball players. First Baptist does.
So true. So true.
Isn't that true, Ray?
You want to go to the first, not to the second or the third.
those good softball players, they show up about February. They're seasonal church goers.
They can hit.
But we got to have him. I know, Pastor, but we got to have him. He's a cleanup hitter for us.
That's right.
He'll be here through Easter anyway.
That's right.
All right. Here's my take on this. By the way, the church did, so they said, practice safe distancing. Okay. I don't think it's neighborly. Let me put it this way. In a time where your state and your city officials and your healthcare providers are asking you, please don't get together in big groups, because not because it's in any form, church or ball games or beaches or anything, because we have to think about our hospitals and our nurses and our doctors. We don't want these facilities overrun. Now, if we're not there at these hospitals, or we don't have family members who work there, it's easy to be out of sight, out of mind, and just say, oh, no, I'm defending our constitutional rights to worship. Who's with me?
Right.
Okay. What if every church did that? What if all Christian churches across America just said, that, you know, forget this, we're going to church. And I'm all for going to church, but I'm just saying, and I'm not for this lasting for beyond April, quite right. frankly. But the president and all everybody's pitching in together, and I just don't – you can't tell me that 1,000 people are getting together and you're saying we're practicing safe distancing from one another. No, you're not, okay? I'm sorry. You can't have 1,000 people under one roof, or if that's what it was, I may have my numbers wrong. People are going to go by each other within a foot or two. You go into the bathroom, well, you got – guess what? You got people coughing in the bathroom, right. and then I don't know what you're doing with the children. All I'm saying is, if you want to fight the fight, if you have a constitutional right to worship, I know that you're probably going to win that in court, I would guess. I don't know does the public health supersede the First Amendment? That's a question a judge would have to answer, and I have all the respect in the world for our friend Matt Staber. But I've taken 4 minutes out of this show to say that I don't agree with the pastor in calling for worship services. Now, anybody disagree with that one? Go ahead.
Anybody want to disagree with the boss?
I'm taking all comers. All right, Ray, you're the perfect person to ask. I'm gonna put you on the spot because
I'm in favor of Ray answering.
Yes, because you have pastored churches for most of your adult life,
right?
And the last thing you ever want to do, and you probably had to cancel in Chicago a few times due to weather.
Sure.
I would guess.
Sure.
The last thing you want to do is cancel church services, obviously. Your thoughts on this?
You used a good word, unneighborly. There are two or three sides to this. Number one, I think if this were a Daniel 3 kind of situation where you have to bow down to a golden image, right? Everybody bows down except Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's one thing. But that is not where we are today. This is a public health crisis, which clearly has gotten the attention of everybody all the way up the chain, up to the White House. So you've got really good Bible-believing churches all across America for the very reason you said, canceling public services and meeting on the internet. It is a short-term situation. So said that way and thought of that way, I wish, how's this? I'm not going to say right or wrong, but I wish that pastor in Florida, Rodney Howard Brown, had done the same thing. It said, for the sake of your health and the health of others, we're going to go online for a few weeks, and then, God willing, we're going to get back together. But having said that, I don't think it looks too good for the sheriff down there to be calling in the pastor and putting him under arrest. It just makes the situation, both, all of it seems unwise to me. Better that in this time of national emergency, we protect our neighbors and we protect our own congregation. I mean, what's that pastor going to say if half dozen people or 50 or more come down with the virus because they were in church on Sunday? That's a bad situation.
That happened in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. Didn't it?
And in Louisiana, too, wasn't it? Also in Louisiana, there was two.
Well, they got a huge problem down the New Orleans area, and you got a church in Baton Rouge that's meeting, is what I understand it. A big church's meeting.
Do you care what I think about this? Because otherwise,
you're the one who introduced this subject. Go ahead.
No, I think it's fascinating. I wanted to hear what you guys thought. I think that I also agree. We certainly are to obey our rulers. Right. That's Romans 13. We are to obey our rulers. If they ask us to do something that's not biblical or is immoral, then that's different. But this was not unbiblical. It was not immoral. And I think we have to cooperate. My husband and I are certainly cooperating with the authorities in our place about, you know, not congregating. And I think churches need to do that because they need to respect the law. The other part, though, I think that there's no way the sheriff should have arrested the president. It seems
you
the
mean
president,
the pastor.
The pastor. Right. I start a rumor. Right. Oh boy.
I think he turned himself in.
An arrest warrant had been issued.
Yeah,
I don't think they put handcuffs on him.
But still, I don't think. See, that's overstepping the bounds of church and state. I have a problem with that. And I think, isn't this a case where Franklin Graham picks up the phone and says, "Hey, brother, think about this." And Tim Wildman picks up the phone and says, "Hey, brother, think about this." Right? You know, you guys call him, talk to him. Not a sheriff. The church, the state, should not overstep their bounds. It is a separation for a reason. So I have a problem with that. So that's what I think, for what it's worth.
Yeah. Okay. Fred, you got time to get in here. What do you think about
that? What would Canada do, Fred?
What would Canada? In Canada, they just don't go to church.
Well, that solves it.
Mm, yeah. There you go.
No, I would have to agree with in this incident. We're at a time in the history of this country, we can't compare this to anything else. Right now, we've got a pandemic.
This is worldwide.
This is worldwide.
Yeah. Right.
And all, you know, we've shut down NHL, NBA. You know, we're not congregating in arenas. So for churches to be asked for several weeks to suspend your formal services, go online, listen to your pastor's sermons. I do not think that is out of the bounds, as you put it, Tim, neighborly, but being responsible. And someone just said a few moments ago, what happens if a dozen people at that church become ill because of what they did?
And they could make health workers who have to treat them ill. I see both sides. I absolutely agree with Tim. I don't think this was wise. I don't think it demonstrates love or care or concern for your neighbor. I think it's a bad witness. I also agree with Sandy that the sheriff's department should have worked something else out other than arresting them, because they very well – now, the way Matt Staver has – and I think Steve Jordahl in the next segment actually has some sound from Matt Staver, maybe explaining why Matt decided to take this case. I think this pastor has some constitutional grounds to sue, but this could have all been avoided if the sheriff's department had said, you know what, we're not going to go arrest the guy, and that's
look,
all
look,
there is to
look, the governor of Florida has shut off beach rentals, condo rentals, in Florida for the foreseeable future. The beaches are empty. This is... what I'm saying is, this is an enormous, for everybody, for the whole country, for Florida, you're about to get into vacation season,
right?
And I'm just saying, if he's willing to do something that drastic, can't you just pass on 1,000 people to church for 4 weeks,
right?
Huh? Just to show we're all in this together.
Yeah. No, I think this is a bad witness. Because people are going to think about Christians, they're going to think about the church. Oh, you're the folks that didn't care if the rest of us got sick.
Right.
Yeah. That's bad. My sister's a nurse at the hospital. They got enough people without you.
Yeah.
Without you endangering so many other people.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Thanks, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Keep the government running.
Okay. Yes.
Oh yeah, I gotta go. I'm gotta go save the country.
All right. We'll be back. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay. Bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.